This summer marks the 50th anniversary of Apollo 15, July 25th through August 7th, which makes it the 50th anniversary of the lunar rover being driven on the moon. That's why we're delighted to welcome New York Times bestselling author Earl Swift, whose newest book is Across the Earth's Wilds, The Lunar Rover and the Triumph of the Final Moon Landings. It's from Custom House Publishing. Earl, how are you this morning?
Doing well, thanks. How are you doing?
I'm good. I enjoyed your book. What an extraordinary adventure. I remember I was a teenager when all this took place and remember seeing the sketches of the lunar rover and hearing it called the moon buggy on the news media. The NASA wasn't too crazy about that designation, were they?
Well, no, they viewed it as a spacecraft on wheels. So, but, you know, it's a bit difficult to resist given that dune buggies were such a big deal at the time. You know, the press couldn't resist playing on that.
Absolutely. This was the result of a number of people, one or two of them we might have heard of, but most of them are people that sadly through time, the names have been lost, that you talk about in your book, Across the Airless Wild.
Well, the longest presence in this story belongs to a group of engineers who were never household names, but who were the real brains behind not only the lunar rover, but much of the entire Apollo program and actually its predecessors. But that's the case with the entire space program. You had 400,000 people employed by it, both at NASA and its private side contractors. And, you know, the only public face really belonged to the astronauts. So we as a public saw the users of the space program, not the people responsible for the gear and the planning that got us to do all those amazing things. It was fun to tell the story just to get some of those behind-the-scenes folks front and center.
Right. Guys like Greg Becker and Frank Pavlicks that I read about. Interesting that the two of them and Wernher von Braun were guiding forces behind this, and all of them were immigrants into the United States, which kind of has a nice ring to it about us being a nation of immigrants.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, if you were to go through those 400,000 people employed in the space program back in the 60s, I think you'd find that there are a great number of immigrants on the payrolls and an even greater number of people who were first-generation Americans whose parents wound up coming here from elsewhere.
Right.
So Frank Pavlicks and Greg Becker, both of whom worked for General Motors and helped develop the lunar rover. Their boss was a guy named Sam Romano, whose parents had moved from Italy.
Mm-hmm.
They're great examples of the whole, really.
Right. They didn't have very long to develop this. Most of the space program was let's see how fast we can get this done because we have to beat the Soviets to the moon. And now that we're there, what are we going to do? So it seemed like the window of time that it took to come up with, and there were a number of prototypes, weren't there? This is the one that made it is not the only one that was ever considered.
True. You got to make a distinction here between the many, many years from which they talked about it and then the very, very small window of time in which they finally decided, okay, we got to build this thing and get it aboard a lunar module now. You know, you can go all the way back to 1952 in terms of their talking about it. And there were a number of prototypes that NASA came up with, a lot of different studies that it funded. But eventually, budget cuts killed all that. And it looked like there was going to be no rover at all until General Motors, again, Frank Pavlicks and Sam Romano, came to Wernher von Braun at the Marshall Space Flight Center with a prototype of a tiny little featherweight go-kart that folded like a business letter to slide aboard the lunar module. And that's really where it began. And they had to develop the thing and build it and test it in 17 months, which was less than half the time that NASA hardware usually took. And so it was a breakneck effort. It was frantic.
And I didn't realize this until I read your book, that astronauts had the opportunity to train in specific sites, but also all around the world in learning how to be geologists, because the astronauts that were going to the moon weren't geologists. They were mostly test pilots and engineers and such, right?
Yeah, well, with one exception, they were all test pilots. And that one exception was on the last Apollo mission, Jack Schmidt. He was a geologist, but geology was the science that made the most sense to pursue. It offered the greatest opportunity for insights into Earth history, the solar system's history, along with the moon's. And so beginning with 15, especially, the astronauts were very well trained. to the point where, I mean, their training was comparable to that achieved by a master's student. You know, they went all over the world. They went to Iceland. They went to Hawaii. They went to the nuclear test site in Nevada, studying the effects of meteor strikes, looking for different styles of rock that they might encounter on the moon, being able to identify what they were looking at. And they became really good scientists.
They also did not know how thick the dust was going to be on the moon. I remember one passage talking about they were concerned that people would sink down in 10 feet of dust or something, and how are they going to work around that? Happily enough, that's not what they found.
That was especially a worry in the 1950s, and it was a serious worry. There was a theory that the lunar dust was unconsolidated, that is, it was loose, and it might be a couple thousand feet thick, and so any landing spacecraft would just disappear from view the second it, you know, would just keep going and sink into this dry lunar quicksand. Of course, it was pretty much theoretically disproven by the time the Surveyor program sent soft landing probes onto the lunar surface.
Right.
But that settled it once and for all.
Earl, it's a really fascinating book. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And our thanks again to Earl Swift, the author of Across the Airless Wilds, The Lunar Rover and the Triumph of the Final Moon Landings from Custom House. It's available at bookstores and online everywhere as we observe the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 15 mission and the first time that human beings, American astronauts, drove around on the moon. For WTBF, I'm Doc Kirby.